Hello, welcome to the Comic Connoisseur. Tonight we'll be talking about The Suicide Squad, the not-quite-sequel to Suicide Squad, the James Gunn-directed movie that is the not-quite-follow-up to the David Ayer mishmash weird movie that was the true...
like, the first movie.
Yeah, David. Yeah, the first movie is mishmash of David Ayer, movie by committee and movie by a trailer studio, and the second movie is James Gunn with studio interference, but we'll go about that later. Of course, my co-host, Andrew Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also, this is Red Ink.
Will Smith is terrible in this movie.
So, The Suicide Squad. Let me just go ahead, JT. I'll just let you go first.
Just so we know what Ben was trying to express there in his
ramble,
initial novel, is The Suicide Squad is a soft reboot / finger quote sequel to the original 2016 film. A lot of other people feel there is enough connective tissue here that you can see it as a sequel to the original film, much in the same way that G.I. Joe Retaliation was a soft reboot / sequel to the original film Rise of Cobra in that sense. But it operates as a sequel and as its own first film in a potential franchise. Because the way you were fighting back the laughter there, Ben, I don't know if anyone really understood what you were saying.
Well, it's you're right. And the first movie was a mess. David Ayer was trying to do a dark and gritty, weird movie with the weird Snyder DC template of there's a beacon of light in the sky, blah-de-blah-de, blah-blah-blah, not really allowed to kill anybody, bullshit. And then they saw the studio saw the rough cut, like, holy shit, what the fuck is this? A trailer house made a rough cut, a rough trailer of it that the studio heads loved. They're like, well, let's let the people who made the trailer chop this up. And they're like, okay. And then they're like, okay, that's a little too weird. Let's, like, do 50-50. Let's meet in the middle. And that's what the theatrical cut is. And I'm of the opinion that the David Ayer cut would not be good. The pure trailer cut would not be good. The 50-50 cut we got was obviously not good. There is no good cut of the 2016 Suicide Squad movie sitting somewhere in an abandoned crate somewhere in a salt mine. It doesn't exist.
If Zack Snyder did a cut, he'd do perfect.
No, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist.
Like I said with the Zack Snyder cut, I didn't think the Snyder cut was going to be any better or worse than the Whedon cut. I would be interested to see the Ayer cut just to see what his actual vision was. That being said, the only cut of the first Suicide Squad movie that we got, if I prefer the extended cut you get in the DVD, it works better as a film, I feel, much in the same way when you watch, like, the extended cut of, like, Daredevil or Ghost Rider. Doesn't make the movie any better, but it fills in, like little bits of information that I think overall make it a little more of a cohesive story.
This is how sad...
I'm Batman. I'm going to attack.
This is Deadshot.
And in an alley with his daughter. And I'm going to recreate, you know, the death of my parents. It doesn't bother me at all.
The saddest thing about this is the goddamn fucking Arkham video game tie-in animated movie is the best Suicide Squad movie out there.
You know what? You're right. In my opinion, it's the second best. I think this is the best Suicide Squad movie that we've gotten thus far.
No.
We've established JT's been Clockwork Orange.
Look, I smile.
Night. Red, JT's been brainwashed.
I smiled at parts of this movie. I fully admit it, but I still say the animated Assault on Arkham movie is still better because it's just infinitely more watchable. That's even with what the fuck her name is doing that really god-awful, horrible, worst version of an Arlene Sorkin impersonation I've ever heard.
You mean Tara Strong?
No, it wasn't Tara Strong. It was someone else that was...
Because... It was the chick who does fucking Starfire's voice.
Yeah. Tara Strong doesn't even attempt to do the Arlene Sorkin accent. She just does bitchy bubbles.
Oh, it's Hayden Walsh.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Arlene Sorkin's...
Bubblegum.
Yeah, Arlene Sorkin's Harley Quinn accent comes from a three-block radius in New York City. It's a very specific New York Jewish accent that is literally her accent. It is... If you ever watch the movie Oscar, Arlene Sorkin plays a mobster's secretary/girlfriend, and she does the accent in that movie. That is her accent.
Stallone comedy movie from the 90s?
Yes. Yes. That is
Oh, my God.
That is Arlene Sorkin. That is her real speaking accent.
And agreed, Arlene Sorkin, like Kevin Conroy is the Batman, and in my opinion, Lou Ferrigno is to the Hulk. She is a number one, the best Harley, and all others pale before her. Tara Strong didn't do so bad. Hayden Walsh, can never remember the actress's name, Bernadette from Big Bang Theory.
She was not that bad.
But the reason I didn't like her, she didn't have that. She I think hers was a little too Jersey and not enough Brooklyn, in my opinion.
That's true. But she did.
It's not Jersey or Brooklyn. It's Long Island.
That's true. But the problem. But the thing is, she did make an attempt. I give points for an attempt at the accent versus not doing it at all. Tara Strong doesn't even attempt it. She just does bitchy bubbles.
Okay, bitchy bubbles. I think we're getting off topic.
But okay, and that's where I want to get to the Suicide Squad is.
One thing I wanted to point out is
JT
held the record for the weirdest fucking references ever to anything. I think Ben just took the record from you.
With Oscar?
Yes.
Okay, I've never heard Arlene Sorkin in a movie in any other speaking role other than Batman stuff, other than Oscar. I'm sorry, but back to the accent. The 2016 Suicide Squad movie, David Ayer movie. Margot Robbie didn't really do a good job. She meanders in and out of the accent. She didn't really do it. It's like a gymnast jumps off the rafters, tries to do a triple flip, splat, breaks the neck.
What they did with Harley in the 2016 film is, and like you said, that they're putting the Zack Snyder aesthetic all over that film. They sucker punched Harley.
Yeah.
They took the aesthetics that they did with like all the girls in the movie Sucker Punch and just made her not even a character, a caricature of what people think of Harley Quinn. Now, me being a straight white male, I liked how Margot Robbie looked as Harley visually. I thought, okay, that's an okay spin on Harley. Sure, why not? But aside from that, you know, I enjoyed parts of the 2016, but there's not a there. Like, it's basically I enjoyed Harley and I enjoyed Jai Courtney's Captain Boomerang, because that is just the right amount of sleaze to put on that character.
But to move on with that, in the Suicide Squad, Margot Robbie did a much better job with the accent. She meanders in and out of it still, but there are moments in it when she's in it and she's committed to it.
Ben.
Yes, yes.
What's her natural accent?
I've never heard her natural accent in a movie.
She's Australian.
Okay, I didn't know that.
So when you're like, oh, she's slipping out of her fucking accent, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? She's still fucking trying.
That's true. I'll give you that. Well, this goes into the second point, because I was talking to you off air about this, Red. I said to you about Jack.
How you hate women?
What? No, Jesus Christ, Red. Jai Courtney. Jai Courtney's Captain Boomerang. I said, I don't know what the fuck he was doing in the 2016 movie, because he sounded fucking awful, but he actually sounded like an Aussie in this movie. And he said to me, he is Australian. I'm like, what the fuck was the director doing in the 2016 movie then?
Well, you know, at that time, he hadn't quite successfully had the studio executive removed from his rectum, because it was all the way up his ass. But
to me, it sounded like Jai Courtney was trying to do Steve Irwin in the first movie. Because Australia, believe it or not, is as big as fucking America. And they have, their accent isn't just one fucking accent. It varies from fucking province to province.
Many subtle flavors. Yeah. So the overall plot, just to give our listeners a quick rundown, is Amanda Waller presides over Bellerive Penitentiary, where all these, everything from B to Z list supervillains are incarcerated there. You know, you complete these missions, a certain amount of years are taken off your sentence, and we're thrown right into the meat grinder, and they're sent to the island of Corto Maltese to get rid of all the information involving this thing called Project Starfish. Now, the first time I ever heard Corto Maltese was in Batman 89, and I honestly thought for years that was a real country. I didn't know that it was originally, the name comes from like an Italian graphic novel series of like an adventuring sea captain, or that Frank Miller first used it in The Dark Knight Returns. I thought it was a real country for years. And they're just thrown into it, and by the end of it, the squad saves the day, have managed to get one over Amanda Waller, and we, you know, end of movie. Now, well, I honestly thought Captain Boomerang was going to last a lot longer in this movie than he did.
That's something else I want to add is, see, people think that James Gunn's style is purely the Guardians of the Galaxy style. And watching this movie, I have to disagree. Because I've not seen a lot of James Gunn movies before I saw, like, his contribution to the Marvel movies and I saw The Suicide Squad. I don't know what his style is.
He did one independent movie, I think, before that.
Well, if I had to guess, I would say The Suicide Squad is closer to his style than Guardians of the Galaxy. Because just going from what's in my head, Guardians of the Galaxy has, like, the Marvel formula all over it. It has the Whedon-esque dialogue. It has the Marvel set pieces in there. It has, like, a certain style that is James Gunn in it, but it has Marvel's fingerprints all over it. This movie doesn't have Marvel's fingerprints in it. I think that this is more undistilled James Gunn we're seeing here.
I've seen a few of his movies previously, like Slither and Super with Rainn Wilson, and he does have this he has this tendency to feature, like, you know, ad hoc families, or, you know, people who are damaged in some way and kind of come together in spite of themselves. Like, but he has a genuine passion for that, which I think allows him to succeed more often than other directors who tend to lean on that. And he does have that and Whedon-esque sort of quality where, you know, he brings the best, like, he gets the people together and he creates this, you know, it's the same thing with, say, Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro, and, you know, because he has Nathan Fillion in here is kind of like his De Niro. Like, he has that quality, and I think he honestly commits, you know, he just wants to make fun, entertaining movies. You know, he likes to make romps, you know, but he's also at the same time serious and mindful of, you know, what the craft and everything that goes in, versus somebody like Whedon, who just seems to think exposition and dialogue is the only thing that matter in movies. So also, you know, when you talk about how the trailer studio cut the original film, you know, because that's after the first Guardians came out, and they're like, oh, they used that as a template for that trailer, and then they tried to make the first movie like that, which is, I think, part of the reason why, despite James Gunn not working for Marvel at the time that he got this job, that they, Warner Brothers, was right to snap him up, because they saw the magic that he brought to that the first two Guardians movies.
And that's something else here is, well, music was, you know, while musical scores is a part of what he does, you know, pop music was not as big a thing here. It's like there is no mixed track thing done in this movie. I can't think of, like,
it's all over the fucking place.
No, it wasn't.
Like, what are you, deaf?
No, it wasn't. It wasn't like especially if you compare it to the 2016.
It opens with Johnny Cash, for fuck's sake.
Other than Johnny Cash, which was Folkom Prison, which it, like, if you compared it with 2016, the music was a lot more understated. Like, the music just kept going. The music was rapid fire nonstop in the 2016 movie. In this movie, it was a lot more muted. It was a lot more part of the ambience, and a lot less in your face. Because, like, in the 2016 movie, I could think of, like, it went like House of the Rising Sun to You Don't Know Me to Jesus Christ. It just was like Seven Nation Army. Like, it was just fucking rapid fire.
I like the way he uses music, although, yeah, this one, it was a little... It wasn't as focused as
Guardians. It was more muted and more... It wasn't up in center and in your face. Music was not a plot element.
He didn't use it as a narrative device.
It wasn't a plot element, because in Guardians of the Galaxy, music was a plot element because Peter Quill had a literal cassette player on his strapped to his belt. There was no character to do that here, yeah. so it was not as big an important thing here. So what I did like was some of the reimaginings of the characters. I did like. Bloodsport. Bloodsport, Idris Elba, fantastic in any movies I've ever seen him in. What I loved is they introduced Idris Elba. They gave, like, his whole bio when they're talking about him, when he's scraping up the bubblegum. You know, he put Superman in the ICU with a kryptonite bullet. You know, trained since birth by his father with every weapon possible. Birth. By his father, with every weapon imaginable, can turn anything into a lethal weapon. You know, can hit the center of any target with any gun. All this stuff, and what I liked about it was the fact that, you know, he sees his daughter, and it's almost like a rejection of the 2016 Suicide Squad, because. I say this knowing that this is actually a character trait of Deadshot. Deadshot's character trait in the comics is he is extremely, extremely devoted as a father to his daughter. But Bloodsport to his daughter is an asshole. He is an absentee deadbeat father who basically when his daughter says, "I got caught stealing a watch," and he says, "Well, next time you should have had a look out," he's basically horrible to his daughter. But when put into the prospect of Waller basically saying, "I'm engineered this to where I'm going to make sure your daughter's going to go to jail and she's going to die in jail.
She's coming here."
Yeah. All of a sudden he's like, "Oh no, you're not. I'm going to make sure," you know, then all of a sudden, you know, the paternal part comes out of him.
Well, for as much of an asshole as Bloodsport is,
yes,
you don't fuck with his family.
Yeah, and that feels a lot more real to me for this, because, you know, the way Will Smith played Deadshot in 2016 was almost insultingly saccharine sweet.
Well, it's Will Smith. He kind of does that with all his roles.
Yes, yes. And The other thing I have to add is, you know, you have Bloodsport agree to this, and he's being shown his recruits for his team, and the first person they meet is
John Cena.
Yes. Otherwise known as Peacemaker. And what was his introduction again? You know, trained from birth by his father, can turn anything into a lethal weapon in his hands, can hit any target with any gun. And Bloodsport's like, are you taking the piss? That's my bio you're reading to me. He is redundant. This is me. You are reading me my bio for this guy.
Yeah, I love the exasperated look on Idris Elba that moment. He's like, are you ducking serious? And we meet the rest of the team. Before we even get to the rest of his team, like, I mean, we get the initial team we meet that we think was going to make it. Like I said, we got Rick Flagg, the Weasel, Boomer, Harley, TDK, which is, for some reason, I don't know if it was James Gunn or the writers of this film, they got this weird boner for Arm Fall Off Boy from the Legion of Superheroes. But being that it works because it's the Suicide Squad and they've used so many like Z-grade characters over the years, they brought in Michael Rooker, who's another kind of De Niro for Gunn Scorsese, as Savant, which is a character from
Birds of Prey,
the Gail Simone Ed Benes run in the early aughts. I don't know what I was thinking with that. I did not think he was going to become such a pussy so quickly.
Dude, he was actually kind of badass. He grabbed the Weasel. Okay, that came out wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, there was all that. But I mean, you know, this guy's like this supervillain that's in prison. Like, you assume he's made his bones in the world of supervillainy, and I just think he had this completely undiagnosed PTSD, and that's why he just started and he tried swimming away, like, you know,
people
Rose.
Were fucking exploding and dead bodies and shit. Like, you'd run too.
He didn't have any weapons. He was just there. He's a hand to hand guy.
Yeah.
And people are shooting bullets, and one of his teammates is a guy whose ability is his arms detach, and he's doing Three Stooges shit.
Yeah. No, I mean, and then we find out as the title card drops that they were a bluff to get the real team on the island. We go back to see, you know, like how Bloodsport and Peacemaker and Ratcatcher, King Shark, who's the Groot of this movie, and I say that as an absolute positive. The Steve Agee, who played that chunky guy with the beard, who's actually the warden of Bel Rev from the Ostrander series in the 80s. He did the suit capture, or sorry, the mocap filming for King Shark, who's voiced by fucking Stallone. Like, Sly Stallone came in like that. It's my favorite part of the casting in this movie. And Polka Dot Man, they made a completely ineffectual, one of the best/worst examples of supervillainy from the 50s and 60s Batman
40s.
Comics, and made him
40s.
Was it the 40s? Okay.
He's a Bill Finger villain.
Okay, Ben, I thought he started in the 50s. Thank you for pointing that out. But they made him a complete fucking threat. How do you turn Polka Dot Man into a threat? They found a way. And Harley, I mean, what did you think of Harley's costume? Because I've seen people arguing on Facebook about that.
Well, technically, like, the costume she had when she initially dropped was like a version of her like outfit from Injustice, I think. Afterwards, she's like in this weird version of the wedding dress for the rest of the movie.
I was thinking about like the Injustice suit. I thought that was like, eh. I mean, people still want to see Margot Robbie rocking the black and white onesie.
But the other thing I have to add about the whole beginning part with the ambush on the beach, you know what that was, right?
Well, I know James Gunn wanted to base part of this off of like certain war movies. I just can't remember which one exactly
James
that was
Gunn
going for.
Was literally and symbolically killing the 2016 movie.
Well, that would explain why Boomer got it so bad. Also, Mongal, like, the fuck was she trying to do? What you're the daughter of a supervillain that can go toe to toe with the Man of Steel, and you're just swinging from it. It's like you deserve to be roasted alive, trapped underneath a burning helicopter. I'm sorry, I don't feel 1 ounce of sympathy for her character whatsoever.
But it's like I don't feel any sympathy for David Ayer, because I think David Ayer is one of these guys that sniffs his own farts and thinks, like, well, my movie would be so much better if they let me do what I wanted.
Ben,
and,
can we just talk about this film? You keep going back and trashing 2016.
Let me finish my sentence. I know it burned him in the ass when he saw that opening, because James Gunn's basically saying, yeah, I killed your movie. That's what this is. The opening was James Gunn killing 2016. But moving forward, the whole thing was about, you know, destroying the past, saving what little that could be salvaged to move forward, saving Harley, saving Rick Flagg, moving forward with those. And the actor for Rick Flagg, like in the old movie, he, as Red would say, he looked like a crack addict. Here he bulked up, and if he had the actor staying by himself, like in that T-shirt, he looked like a pretty big, strong guy. But then you had next to John Cena and fucking Idris Elba, he looked kind of wimpy. It's kind of like those two other guys are a lot bigger.
Yeah. And I never really, like, it's always, I don't know why it took me so long to figure that out, but I have to thank you, Red, for that he looked like a crack addict. It's, for some reason, I could not get those two words to come together in my mind when watching that original film, but to... And in my head, like I said, this can be a sequel to the original film. And the Rick Flagg in here, it's kind of like the when the create. Remember the show C-Lab 2021?
Yes.
Okay. So the writers of that show said this is literally the next season of the original 70s cartoon C-Lab 2020. That it's a year later and they've all gone insane. I think that's what's happened. Like, it's like a year or two, whatever the timeline is from the first film, and Flagg is just kind of checked out. And he's like, fuck it, this is my life. I literally don't care anymore. Dr. Moon left me for some other researcher. He literally, all he has is Amanda Waller and the squad. So he's just kind of, he doesn't have a death wish, but he just doesn't give a fuck either. And it kind of works because you look at the way Joel Kinnaman, like he's not, he's barely in charge of the first squad when they drop on the beach. You know, he's yelling at them. He's like, well, he's not really a dog. He's a weasel, and he's not that dangerous. Well, he's killed 27. Like, you just see he's broken on some profound level. But all he knows is leading these assholes into battle and somehow by the skin of his teeth surviving.
Well, I have a problem with that, too, by the way, because I can totally buy Amanda Waller throwing some fucking Z-listers onto one beach to be an instruction to put some B and A-listers into a less hostile environment to insert them. I can buy Waller doing that. Well, that's a total Amanda Waller thing to do. I can buy her even putting in some heavy hitters to be fodder to do that. I can't buy her doing that to Rick Flagg. Not because she has affection for Rick Flagg, but because Rick Flagg is a very strong asset to have.
Yeah. And for crack addict versus leading man here, Red, what did you think of Flagg in this movie?
I don't think James Gunn knew what to do with him, to be honest.
Yes.
Because in the comics, Rick Flagg is loyal to a fault.
Yes.
So, this is skipping to the end, and I hate fucking skipping to the end when we talk about these fucking movies, because I like to talk to them and talk about it in order, but we never do. So skipping to the end, Rick Flag has a moment of consciousness when he realizes that kids are being killed and experimented on. But Peacemaker doesn't give a shit. It should be the fucking opposite. Rick Flag usually would not give a shit. This is the fucking mission. This is what I gotta do for my country. I can put my personal feelings aside. But no, they needed him to be a good guy, I guess.
Yeah.
And die for no fucking reason.
Well, they could bring him back, because, I mean, they, in the original Ostrander run, like, they killed Flag off, and then they brought him back, you know, 20 years later, having survived the explosion. So, and we know Peacemaker is going to survive and get his own TV series. More than likely, they could bullshit some way that, you know, he survived or he was found. He wasn't quite dead yet. Who knows?
They showed an X-ray shot of his heart getting pierced.
Ben, we're talking about DC Comics more so than Marvel. They have come up with even stupider ways to resurrect people who are definitively dead. I'm saying there's a chance. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but I'm saying there's a chance.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Exactly. Yeah, so they get into the island and, like, I keep wanting to say Deathstroke. Bloodshot.
Bloodsport.
Thank you. Jesus. Bloodsport. I like what they did, giving him, like, this armored suit that he just pulls this stuff off, and all his weapons are, like, nanotech, and they just, like, you know, like, transform into other shit, which is, I think, the easiest way visually to approximate his powers from the original John Byrne comics. I mean, this version of Bloodsport famously was one of the first big villains of the post-crisis Superman stories that John Byrne was writing. And he was given this device that was, like, implanted into his wrists from LexCorp that, you know, he thought of if he wanted a pump-action shotgun loaded with, you know, Hellfire rounds, it would, from some storage facility, this, you know, Hellfire shotgun would be teleported into his hand. So I appreciate that they did something like that.
Is he one of those awful Bloodline characters?
No.
No, he's not. This literally, he came within the first 2 years of
Man of Steel.
After the Man of Steel miniseries, where his character in the comics, he was a Vietnam draft dodger who his brother went to Vietnam pretending to be him. The brother is messed up.
Lost his arms and legs.
Yeah, he gets majorly fucked up, and he goes mad, and Lex Luthor decides to use this to his advantage in whatever scheme it was. I forget what exactly. And then years later in prison, fought the white Aryan Bloodsport that came out in the 90s, and after he kicked his ass, that guy was killed by all the other racists in prison for being inferior. I love that of his costume. I find it appealing because, you know, something I thought they're using this version of Bloodsport. Are they going to do that particular, you know, gimmick? And they found a way around it that is both visually interesting and you don't have to waste any dialogue explaining it. But the way they explained, Red?
What I thought while watching this movie is, why didn't they just have Idris Elba play fucking Deadshot?
I think there's, like, some sort of weird contract with Will Smith that Will Smith has to play Deadshot in X amount of movies as some bullshit like that. It was sort of like how Jai Courtney was in a contract that Jai Courtney has to play Captain Boomerang in 2 movies.
Yeah. I do remember reading an interview with Gunn where he didn't go into specifics because they were talking about that, but ultimately the studio decided to do this, which is why we get the whole father-daughter thing. It's, again, it's one of that tenuous connections that allows this to act as a kind of sequel. You know, they get into the the forest, and the whole thing with Ratcatcher, I can't decide whether I like I like the kind of heart and soul that Ratcatcher 2 brings to the group, but on the other side of that, it just kind of annoys me at the same time.
She's not terrible. I'm saying this in the fact that she wasn't really in your face about anything. They could have been really in your face about a lot of things about the character, and they weren't. And I think, and I appreciate that. I think that, yes, JD. I think that they, I like the fact that they highlighted that her and Bloodsport both had broken paternal bonds, but broken for very different reasons. Like Ratcatcher 2, her dad only gave her love and nothing else. Her dad was
also played by Taika Waititi.
Yes. Her dad gave her love, but didn't give her discipline, didn't give her structure, didn't give her a real home or real life. But, you know, Bloodsport, his dad gave him discipline and skills, but didn't give him an ounce of love. It's like there was something there that if given more ethos, more pathos, more focus, could have become something better, but it was there.
Yeah. And I can't get over how cuddly King Shark is. Like, I love that. Absolutely a killer, and you should not hug that, but I kind of want to hug King Shark.
Have you ever touched shark skin?
No, Ben, I have not.
Don't ever want to hug King Shark, because I've touched shark skin.
Okay.
It's jagged, is what Ben is trying to say.
Yes.
Okay. But more so than any other version of King Shark, I mean, it's like we have that one from Assault on Arkham.
That one was fucking hilarious. That one was fucking hilarious. No heights!
And I think that's the thing you need with, as much as I enjoyed King Shark, again, it's just like, he's this incredibly vicious teddy bear kind of character, which, oddly enough, kind of balances out all the other extremes that we have amongst the group. I mean, you look at Polka Dot Man, it's like, instead of being this, you know, gimmick criminal that pulls polka dots off his suit and, like, they turn into buzzsaws or lockpicks or whatever, you know, Batman sort of gadgetry that he's decided to pack in there. He was experimented on by his mother, who's a scientist working at Star Labs, and he's basically got a cosmic STD that he has to puke or otherwise get rid of these polka dots that well up from inside him. Like, that first scene where you see his face all bulging out like the Elephant Man, I was like, the fuck is going on? Because they don't really explain until well after he's puked that once, and then you see the zits growing again, and he has to explain how he's got this whole mother complex thing, and what Red said off mic, folks, about that joke, Red, it still makes me laugh when I think about it. Like, the whole mama issues thing. But okay, what absolutely pissed you? What broke you about this movie, guys?
How boring it was?
It did drag a little bit in the middle. I mean,
it dragged in the middle, it dragged in the beginning, and it dragged in the end.
The movie does have pacing issues, I'll give you that. The movie did need a second pass in editing. But the acting was strong. Idris Elba, I enjoyed in every scene I saw him in. What I did like was that one scene where you had Idris Elba, you had Bloodsport, you had Rick Flag, and you had Peacemaker all tied up in the back of the police car. And Idris Elba or Bloodsport was basically talking about the one hit kill. And he's communicating to his teammates, basically saying, you know, basically on three, we're going to kill these three guys. And
yeah,
because all three of them had in common that they're all ex-military, they're all soldiers, and they're all trained, and they're all capable of what he's telling them to do. I liked how ridiculous Starro looked.
Oh yeah, that's I actually had an argument with a friend of mine, discussion, whatever, about he thought that was a spoiler on the level of Terminator John Connor in Terminator Genisys. I refuse to call it Genisys because that movie fucking sucks. And I disagreed with him. I mean, it's a spoiler, yes, but I don't think it was a spoiler on the level like that. The John Connor revelation in the first trailer, mind you, spoiled like a crucial point of the film. Well, you know,
you should tell your friend that a trailer isn't for you as a comic fan. It's for people who don't read comics. Just go to the movies for fucking movie's sake. And they have no fucking clue what Starro is.
And I love how Starro looks ridiculous and cartoony. Because they could have totally had, like, the CGI guys make Starro look like some sort of Cthulhu horror thing that is like a nightmare beyond the stars. But they did.
Weird, dumb fucking machine that they stick on your head and it reads your mind.
Yeah, yeah.
Like in fucking the Schneider cut.
Yeah. I love how it looks like a weird fucking cartoon starfish. Like all it needed was a pair of like swim trunks and it with Patrick Starr, it's fucking amazing. It's perfect. It's great. It's hilarious. It's ridiculous.
And that's what I love, cuz you know, I mean, the colors on one level evoke, you know, the classic Silver Age Starro. And then you have the, like, the colors kind of belie the danger. And, I mean, you do kind of get some of that Cthulhu-esque danger with, like, the little, like, tentacles that come out to, like, grab the Thinker, who, honestly, that was stunt casting of the highest caliber here, getting, you know, Peter Capaldi to play this villain who really doesn't do anything aside from being a major creep. And then you have, like, him, you know, spouting off, like, his spore clones, whatever you want to call them, that like face attached to people, and you cannot remove these things like in the comics. And I would like to talk to Gunn and ask him if they kind of took that aspect of, like, you know, literally, if you try to take these things off, it's just going to rip people's faces off. Because there's the classic Starro, and then there's the Morrison Porter Starro that they had during JLA in the 90s, where these things were basically DC's version of the Xenomorphs face huggers. Which you kind of got there. But, I mean, it's just, what do you do with this thing? It's a fucking telepathic starfish from outer space that can possess you, and you become, like, part of the hive mind. But something about the insanity of that, I think, balances out against all the sheer insanity of so many of these, like, damaged and flawed characters that make up the squad. Like, Peacemaker, we've barely talked about him. You know, the guy that loves peace so much he'll kill to get it.
And Peacemaker is a great character that is one of the many characters that DC inherited from the Charlton Buy, created by Steve Ditko, and was the basis of the comedian from Watchmen. Yes.
Because wasn't originally Watchmen going to be the Charlton characters, and then they didn't quite have the rights?
No, they did have the rights. It's just Ditko was alive back then, and pretty much Ditko wasn't going to sue, but Ditko was still highly acclaimed, and everyone basically said to Moore, look, dude, you're going to be considered a dick if you did this.
Yeah. No, but the thing I love about...
Just one final note about that is... Grant Morrison did do it. Grant Morrison basically remade Watchmen, but with the Charlton characters a couple years ago, and called it Pax Americana, and it is garbage.
I don't even think that was that. That was just...
It was garbage.
An experiment. it was an experiment that didn't turn out that well. I don't think it was hot garbage, but anyway.
I didn't say hot garbage. I said garbage.
I know you wanted to say hot garbage, Ben. We've done this show long enough now. I know what you're saying. But like you're saying, as far as Peacemaker in the film, again, I don't think John Cena is any sort of master thespian, but I appreciate the, you know, the work ethic and, you know, what he brings to the role. And I don't think there's really anyone else that could have played Peacemaker with the right mix of seriousness and douchebaggery the way that he did. And that's overall the performances of this film. I think they're all having fun. I don't think this is anyone was in this for the paycheck except for maybe Capaldi. But I think everyone, you know, even the characters that get blown away in that opening scene, everyone's having fun in the film. And that's something else that we haven't spoken about. James Gunn is, I've seen from like interviews from like his Guardians films and other things, his cast and crew always have nothing but nice things to say to him, because, you know, he makes it an enjoyable experience to come together and make a movie. But yeah, it's like Peacemaker, like that scene with Peacemaker and Bloodsport having the competing kills as they're trying to track down Flag and rescue him, finger quotes, from the rebels. Which is also one of the two what I consider plot holes in the film. One is they were not silent at all in those kills. Like they should have, the rest of the rebels should have been down on them like, you know, white on rice. And two, how in the hell did Pete Davidson get a message to the Corto Maltese army to blow the squad's arrival? I'm just saying that literally makes no sense. And when would that guy, it's Pete Davidson. I know the character's name is Blackguard, but he's just playing Pete Davidson. When would he have had a chance to get into like a comm center to make that call?
And don't prisons record every fucking call, Gene?
Yes, they
exactly.
Do.
And I think the third thing, and it didn't ruin the movie. It just, you know, it's like where the film drags, you know, that does take me out of it. But that whole scene with the president and Harley, and then she kills him. Other than trying to loosely connect that to, you know, what she went through from like Suicide Squad to Birds of Prey to now.
I didn't even watch Birds of Prey, so I didn't even care.
Yeah. You know, they could have, as far as Peacemaker goes, like, there's the other thing I was thinking about is, are they going to do the helmet thing from the comics? Because the Peacemaker that, you know, when they started working with him in like the 80s and into the 90s, you know, his dad's a former Nazi war criminal, and he believes that all the people he's killed, their spirits reside in his helmet. I thought they were going to go that kind of crazy, and I'm glad they stopped it just having being a douchebag Captain America.
I think it works just fine. It doesn't require a lot of exposition dumps and background. And just his dad was a crazy guy who just trained his son really hard. That's all you need.
Exactly. What was your favorite moment in the film?
Favorite moment in the film.
How about you, Red?
Don't really have one, because you notice I've been pretty quiet this whole time because I didn't enjoy the movie at all.
Yeah, but me and Ben have been rambling on and on.
The part that cracked me up the most is a joke that I noticed that a lot of people didn't notice.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Javelin gives Harley Quinn his fucking javelin.
Yeah.
You're the only one worthy to take this. And the reason why she's the only one worthy to take this is she has blonde hair and blue eyes. And he's about to say, carry it for the Aryan race. But he dies before he says that. And he doesn't realize that Harley is a fucking Jew. Or Jewish. Yeah.
And the fact that he had, like, because looking at the suit, they put this German comedian named Flula Borg he didn't appear to have any other javelins, because, I mean, the character in the comic is got, like, a couple of them holstered on, like, a thigh belt or something. And somebody thought, because of how style it is, it has, like, that metal plating and everything on it, like, it's the Spear of Destiny. I was like, oh, Christ.
That's just a really fancy javelin.
Yeah. Honestly, I think my favorite moment in the film is where the Jotunheim Tower is starting to collapse, and everything that happens until the squad gets outside, and then Starro pops out, like, the, you know, Rick Flag fighting Peacemaker, and Peacemaker trying to get Ratcatcher, and Polka Dot Man and Harley. Exactly. That was the most Whedon-esque thing in the movie, I think, is, like, that Blink, or, like, how Harley seemed to have, like, the memory of a goldfish at times.
I also, if I had to pick a moment that I really liked, it's hard. I remember laughing at several moments. I can't remember. Okay. I liked the moment at the beginning where, like I said, you had that Bloodsport talking to Waller, and Waller's giving Peacemaker's bio. And Peacemaker's like, that's my bio. And Red said the funniest thing to me about that. What did you say to me, Red? About how, like, this is literally, like, 100 different comic book characters have this biography of...
Yeah. Like, when you make a new comic, like, you're new to comics and you gotta write, oh, I got a bad guy idea. He's a soldier that was raised from fucking... as a child to kill people. And, like, it's like the most common, like, Cassandra Cain has the same fucking goddamn origin and shit like that. It's, well, fucking everywhere.
Cassandra Cain has a slight difference in that she wasn't even taught language.
Oh, I know you like Cassandra Cain. Yeah, and she's a sacred cow for you. But she has the same fucking origin.
Slightly different.
Just accept it. No, just calm down. Relax. Accept it.
Slightly different.
Take a deep breath.
Slightly different.
I love that exchange. We're just going to take your issues and your mama's titties and put them in this box. We're going to throw that bitch in the ocean.
But what did you say, that there was actually a name for this kind of character, Red? And it lists in Wizard as this type of character? It's
the Mort of the Month?
Yes.
That's not for the character like Bloodshot and fucking Peacemaker. That's... the Mort of the Month are loser fucking comic book characters meant to fill like one or two stories.
Ah.
And that's where Polka Dot Man comes from.
Yeah. And that's something else I want to add is most Suicide Squad stories have a formula where you have the team introduced and you have one person not believe that there's actually bombs. And they get blowed up, so you realize, holy shit, this is real. They're willing to blow someone up. The Assault on Arkham movie had it be KG Beast. 2016 had it be Slipknot, played by Adam Beach.
Man who can climb anything.
Yes. We didn't really... well, we kind of had Savant do it in this movie.
It was obvious in 16 because he didn't introduce fucking Slipknot at all. He was just there.
Yes. So we came, you know, we had like I said, this one, it was Savant. The other anime movie, Hell to Pay, had it. Who was it? It was fucking Count Vertigo.
Yeah, in the initial. You don't think
it was Count Vertigo Punch counts? And Judy.
No, Punch got killed by Judy, and Count Vertigo got his head blowed up.
Okay.
I think.
You could also say Copperhead, because, I mean, granted, that's late in the film, but...
No, the blowed up has to happen early in the film to show Waller means business. That's the whole point.
Yeah, so it would be Count Vertigo.
Yeah. It's the blow up to mean business. That's the one. But see, the Savant blow up to mean business wasn't really to mean business, because like 9/10 of the team was dead at this point. Mongal was on fire and underneath a flaming helicopter. Boomerang was fucking in a million pieces.
After getting the world's worst acupuncture.
Yeah. Like, I knew these guys were going to die right away. Yes. Like,
oh, and one, they telegraphed that. Sorry.
Yeah, they telegraphed that because, one, it wasn't in the fuck. They're not really featured in the trailer.
Yes.
The other thing is, they're all fucking morts of the month. The only one that isn't is fucking Boomerang and Harley and Flag. Those three are the only ones.
Yes.
And, like, I knew right away they were going to fucking die.
Well, the when I said they were telegraphing, is like, they've been telegraphing that for over a year with the advertising, because the tagline and all the posters and the character posters literally says, "Don't get attached."
Mm.
I mean, and I think that was a little bit of brilliance in the advertising, because, you know, well, I mean, I got attached to Boomer in the first movie, so it was a little, you know, a little, it's like, aw, Boomer, you know, like that. But the, yeah, like, Morts of the Month, and even, like, some of the videos seen discussing the film on, like, YouTube and such, they talk about how Javelin's died, like, from post-crisis forward, before the New 52, Javelin died, like, 3 or 4 times, but he keeps coming back, and it's asserted he's the same guy as before, but it's never explained how he...
Writers keeps... forget. Writers don't give a damn.
I know, to me, but...
To me, it's like James Gunn had this book, and on the book, front of the cover, it says, JT's list of obscure characters that I like, and he just scratched it out and put the new Suicide Squad.
Well,
fuck you. You know damn well he was written off the book of Unremarkable Superheroes, which is an actual book.
Well, with the squad, I like the fact that even near the end, when you had like the whole big hero scene with Polka Dot Man biting the dust, like, there was no plot armor in the end. Well, in the other movie, like, the other characters did have sufficient plot armor.
Yeah.
And I like that, because a movie like Suicide Squad harkens back to me to an old movie called The Dirty Dozen. Are you guys familiar with The Dirty Dozen?
Yes, I actually own that film in 3 different forms in my collection.
Okay. Red, are you familiar with The Dirty Dozen?
Yes.
Okay. Well, for the listeners, The Dirty Dozen is a film about a platoon put together of basically a suicide squad in World War II of all these soldiers that are basically like criminals that are already going to be killed anyway. So they're like, we're just putting them to use for our country one last time. We're going to put them on a suicide mission. And if they succeed, maybe they'll do our country some good anyways. And most of them fucking die in horrible fucking ways.
Yeah. I mean, that is definitely one of the many war films that James Gunn, you know, based the movie on. And the other thing, I'm just looking at the cast list on the wiki here. I knew he had a cameo in the movie. I just didn't know what he actually looked like. Creator of, like, the 80s Suicide Squad, John Ostrander. He was the
doctor.
The doctor that puts the bomb in Savant's head, and he's like, good dog, in that creepy way. That's the guy we have to thank for the Suicide Squad as we now know it, though.
Now, there's a huge list of thanks and credits of people who have created characters that made cameos and the creators of some of the... There's one creator that did not get a special thanks.
Who's that?
The guy who created the detachable arm guy.
Oh, TDK?
Yeah.
I figured that would have been in there.
No, you want to know why?
Because
That guy is in jail for having a metric fuck ton of CP.
Really?
Yeah.
Drawn by Kurt Swan, Gerard Jones.
Look it up.
Yeah, I'm looking at Arm Fall Off Boy here. Oh, wow. Jesus.
Yeah. He wasn't, he didn't just have it, he was dealing it.
Yeah, it's just also, Ben said CP, and I was like, what the fuck is CP? He's like, Jesus. yeah, wow. The one thing we haven't mentioned, Viola Davis at all, and I love how she went fucking nuts as Amanda Waller in the third act of the film. She's like, sticking out, like, fucking kill them all! Like, she just lost her shit, and I was like, Amanda Waller usually doesn't get like that. I mean, that and Assault on Arkham, where you have the
nobody
great
screws
CCH,
the wall.
Yeah, or I thought she said nobody fucks with the wall. No, it's no screws the wall. And it's CCH Pounder, who is, you know, Kevin Conroy to Batman. She is to Amanda Waller. And it's the quality of the performance that she's done in, like, Justice League and all that. But, yeah, it's like where she lost it. And then, like, her whole support staff just turns off. It's like, you know, for the rest of their days working for the for Task Force, as they are looking over their shoulder and under their car because – she's gonna get them. But I love how versus the almost non-character she was in the first film, like, and it's like she was there and she definitely was a character, but she didn't really do a lot. Like, I don't think she really affected the story as the way a lot of people talk about her. I mean, she's a great actress and all that, just I don't think it really worked as much in the first film as it worked here, you know, the way she played Waller.
The first movie had lots of flaws, but I did have to give it props for a good idea in one spot, in the fact that sending Task Force X to do an extraction, and the extraction was to extract her. That was an idea that could have worked if they landed some of the landings, but fuck, they face planted everywhere, so fuck it.
Yeah. What did you think of the interstitial, like the cuts of, like how Warner Brothers Presents formed out of the blood from Savant's head, or, you know, Operation Jotunheim turns into Operation Harley, like those kind of little background.
I loved it. I loved how Jotunheim formed from like the rusted metal from the shore. That stuff looked great to me.
And one of the things. Sorry,
it worked so much better in my mind for visually for a movie like this than the fucking just a standard tactical. Typing just 1300 Zulu time something, you know, like fucking JAG or something.
Yeah. No, and those kind of interstitials like that, that's something I love the most about the film, is that the Suicide Squad 2021, I think, is one of the best comic booky comic book movies. Like, despite its flaws,
that far.
Ben, just let me finish. I'm not trying to polish a turd. I'm just trying to qualify my statement. It's one of the better, not best, but one of the better comic book movies, because they understand that it's comic book, and they have fun with it, and they just kind of embrace the goofy madness of the whole idea of the Suicide Squad. You know, and that's ultimately what makes this film a win for me, is it's a romp. There's a story. You know, you care about the characters. There's a little bit, you know, there's character development. Because, I mean, you look at how you find out, and this is what made me, one of my favorite laughs in the movie was Bloodsport's Fear of Rats. And he's like, you know, you got Ratcatcher 2's little Sebastian, and he's just like, hi. And he wants to make friends with Bloodsport, and Bloodsport ain't having it. And I thought when Ratcatcher uses her wand, scepter, whatever that thing's called, to summon the horde of rats, one, I thought they're going to form to some giant, you know, kaiju rat, like out of Batman Ninja with the monkeys, and they're swarming over Ratcatcher and Bloodsport, and Bloodsport's just curling up into a ball, and he's like, this is not happening, this is not happening. And you see he gets a little bit of, he kind of sort of starts to get over at the end, because, you know, he pets Sebastian that little bit as the VTOL's taken off, and he's like, yeah, I can pet this one rat, that's, I'll give him one rat. That's what made me laugh the most is, and it goes to Idris Elba, because the guy can, you know, he's pretty decent with comedic acting. I thought that was really funny.
Did you notice Katana?
Where was Katana?
In the bar, the stripper.
What, the one in red?
Yeah.
That's not Katana, that's Mantis from Guardians.
Who also played Katana?
No, it wasn't. Katana's a different actress.
Different actress.
Katana is played by a Japanese actress, and Mantis is played by a Vietnamese actress.
I thought they're the same person.
Nope. We all don't look alike, Red.
Also, I had to go and, I think it was the Nerdist video of, like, all the Easter eggs in the film. Well, I had to go, oh, yeah, that is her, because the first time I watched the movie, I thought it was just, like, some rando actress.
I was going to say, Ben, certainly you don't look like Katana, or else I might make my way down to Texas.
Okay, fair enough. But anyways. Anyways. You
know, okay, yes or no, would you recommend the film to people who haven't seen it yet?
No.
I would.
No, it's a hard recommendation because, let me put it this way. If you aren't already familiar with what the Suicide Squad is, and you're told it's a comic movie, this is not a movie for you, because it's a very violent, bloody, gory movie, and if you're expecting a comic book movie, you won't like it. So no, this is a hard no for recommendation, unless you already know what the Suicide Squad is, and that this is not a recommendation. No. I enjoyed it, but this is not a recommendation. I would... No.
For me, it's okay. It's HBO Max. I don't know which fucking streaming service it's on. If you have the streaming service, just watch it. No big deal. But don't expect anything great from this movie. It's boring.
I would recommend it if you have an interest in seeing it. I would recommend you see it once. I would preface by saying it's gory as hell, and not just because of King Shark. I mean, overall, but
King Shark actually eats pretty bloodlessly. Honestly, he's the most bloodless part of the movie.
Yeah, but most of the people when I talk to him about this is like, yeah, is it really gory? Because you got that shark, man. You know he's gonna eat guys. Like, and I tell him, he's like, you know what? There's like one really gory shot with him, and that's when he fucking bisects the guy with his own hands. He doesn't have to bite him. But I would recommend it. You know, if you like comic book movies, you saw the first movie and you like the idea of the Suicide Squad, I'd say check it out. But I would preface it by saying there are some pretty gory bits in here, and some people just cannot handle that stuff in movies. So, yeah. Now, before we go, I want to ask you guys of some of the TV, the two of the TV versions of the Suicide Squad. Are you familiar with the ones from Smallville?
No.
Okay. The guy they got to play Rick Flag in Smallville for like the two or three times they showed up in the last couple seasons of that series, I can't remember the actor's name. He's the general or admiral, whatever, that's having the dinner with Amanda Waller in the first movie. Not David Arbor, you know, like the sheriff from Stranger Things, the other guy. He played Rick Flag in Smallville. And I've seen a few lists, like the Task Force X episode of Justice League Unlimited.
Yes.
One of my favorites in that entire series.
Yes, I'm familiar with that one.
Although most people that I've talked to who are way more political than me when it comes to, you know, actors and their politics, a lot of them take that episode off the list because Rick Flagg's voiced by Adam Baldwin. So? And most people don't care for his politics, and that's why I've stopped recommending stuff like that to certain people.
What's his politics?
Oh, a lot of people claim he's one of those false honor guys who will go to parties dressed up like he was a Marine in the uniform with the medals and all that. He's just a really hardcore right-wing sort of political guy.
Okay.
He's, you know, he tends to play characters like that. I don't know why. For some reason, that just takes that episode off a lot of people's lists that I've talked to. It's one of my favorites because it's goddamn Suicide Squad. I mean, Michael Rosenbaum is Deadshot. It's fucking awesome.
It's a good episode. Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum says he does Deadshot by trying to do Kevin Spacey.
I can see that. And
which is kind of ironic.
Given everything. Now, final thing I'm going to say, and I swear this is the last thing. If you enjoyed this movie, folks, I highly recommend reading the Ostrander series from the 80s. If you only know the Suicide Squad from the more modern comics, like from the New 52 onward, God have mercy on your soul.
All right. Well, that's our take on the Suicide Squad. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Red Ink.
We'll say goodnight.
So long.
I can't believe I sat through the whole thing.